Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome, everybody, to Microbrew. It is the playoff edition. The Milwaukee Brewers are the National League Central Division champions. You've known that for a while. And on Sunday, you learned that it would be the Arizona Diamondbacks coming back to American Family Field for a playoff series. They were here, of course, in 2011 for the National League Division Series. This is the wild card round. Niger Morgan, I pray, will be making an appearance. I don't know if they can arrange that on short notice, but obviously there are some pretty good memories tied to the Brewers and the Diamondbacks in the playoffs. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Kurt Hoag, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was there on Tuesday when this team clinched a division championship. He's been there this week watching kind of an interesting week of baseball, a lot of falling action. I imagine most fans weren't really paying attention because the Brewers had their Central Division wrapped up, but now they know who they're going to face. Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, that 1-2 punch. I guess I'm getting my wish from last week's podcast. The Cubs are out, the Diamondbacks are in, and it all begins on Tuesday. Kurt, what?
Hello.
You've got to find a way to get Niger Morgan to the ballpark, right? That's going to happen, and you're going to make it happen?
I do not have those powers within me. However, JR, I'd like to say, remember when all of you, aka you, were afraid of playing the Cubs? Well, guess who choked it all the way?
This is definitely going to be a test of what I wanted. Did not want to see Cubs fans overtake American Family Field. We're not going to see that. And you know, that's fair.
That's definitely fair. I just don't think that really matters.
Well, right? And also the more I thought about it, I mean, Justin Steele was going to pitch on Sunday. He would have had to have pitched on short rest to appear at any point in the series. So having the Diamondbacks, I mean, Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly pitched this weekend, but they could easily go game two, game three on normal rest, and that would be very difficult. Now, the Brewers are going to have an advantage in game one, no question. The Diamondbacks do not have the depth of pitching that I would say the Brewers do, but they do have probably the best 1-2 punch in the postseason aside from Milwaukee. So obviously we want to start here and break down this matchup a little bit. What Arizona does well, they have not been to the playoffs since 2017, so this is a big deal for them. It's been a few years, obviously, and I think they do pose some issues, but any team would have. I mean, Miami, I was certainly thinking Miami would be the team until they raced past Arizona to get the 5 seed, but Miami has been playing very well. And actually, in the month of September, Miami has won series over the Braves, Dodgers, Phillies, and Brewers, the 4 best teams in the National League playoffs. So, like, that's a team that's playing really well. I don't think you could say the same about Arizona. They come in on a 4-game losing streak. They didn't back in, but they didn't, you know, they didn't win going away. They lost control of the 5 seed that they've kind of had in their hands for a while. So give me just a couple bullet points, a couple thoughts about what sort of challenge Arizona poses as they head to Milwaukee.
Well, you mentioned it off the top there with Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen, both of whom have pitched pretty well against the Brewers in the past as well, including this year. I do think that's a different Brewers lineup than the one that they're facing right now. As we've talked about on podcast past, Luis Urias is not there. Raimel Tapia is not here. insert other player who has since been DFA'd. Luke Voit is not here. Mike Brasso is not. Side note, the Brewers, I don't know if this is regular for every playoff team. Maybe it is, but it feels like the Brewers have had a disproportionate amount of guys that you thought were going to be good this year be absolutely nothing burgers and still be amazing. I might need you to take a look into that at some point, because goodness gracious, up and down that opening day roster and like the May roster too, dudes just are not here. But the Arizona Diamondbacks, JR, the one thing I think that maybe gives you the most optimism if you're the Brewers is this Diamondbacks lineup is not performing well right now. They do not hit a lot of home runs. We've talked in the past about how important it is to hit home runs in the postseason. And sure, you don't want to be, you know, home run. You don't want that to have that be the only way you can score runs. It's great to be able to get on base and hit singles, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing you want to do is definitely hit home runs. Like you gotta mash a little bit instead of relying on three straight singles against Zach Gallen or Corbin Burns. Like that's just really hard to do. And Christian Walker has some good power numbers.
He does.
Corbin Carroll can bop it out. Like they have guys that can hit homers. But as a team, they're kind of down by the Brewers in like total home runs and slugging and whatnot. And they also play in a good hitter's park. So a little optimism there if you're looking for it.
Yeah, Christian Walker had a pretty good second half, but it was kind of in fits and starts. He was really hot for a while and cooled off quite a bit. Corbin Carroll did hit 25 home runs this year. That's not necessarily his game. He's a very well-rounded, all-round player, big front runner for the National League Rookie of the Year, and is somebody who is kind of their star player at this point. Even as a rookie leadoff hitter, he's by far the most fearsome option in their lineup. You know, you've got Tommy Pham hitting third really for them. And, you know, no offense to Tommy Pham. He hasn't been awesome since they acquired him, but he hasn't been bad. He's had some really key hits for them, but like, that's not a traditional three hitter. They have a lot of the same problems on offense that the Brewers do. In fact, this team is very, very similar to the Brewers. You could argue they're the top two defensive teams, certainly in the National League, maybe in all of baseball. Some stats have them 1 and 2, literally, in defense with the Brewers at the top. You could argue that their pitching, in terms of top two guys anyway, are the best. These are the two best teams across the postseason. You could argue that. I mean, there are other teams that have a debate. But you talked about this lineup having changed so much. Going back to that last game that they played in June, now the Diamondbacks did beat the Brewers 4 out of 6 during the season. They won two, they played two series, and the Diamondbacks won 2 out of 3, but that's in April and late June. Late June, look at this last game. They had Yelich, Contreras, Willy Adames, and then six guys who are not going to be here, because it's Rowdy Tellez cleanup, Owen Miller, Brian Anderson, Raimel Tapia, Luis Urias, Joey Weimer. So this is a completely different offense. Brandon Woodruff and Freddie Peralta did not face Arizona this year. Six games, and those guys didn't pitch. It was Corbin Burns twice. He had one amazing start and one bad one, but the other two big hammers didn't pitch. You know, Jansen Junk had a start. I think Adrian Hauser, Wade Miley was in there. So, like, the Brewers shouldn't feel like that history that they have this year is indicative of how this series could necessarily go. Two pretty similar teams. I guess my concern would be something you said at the outset, that Gallen and Merrill Kelly absolutely shut this team down twice this year. Both times those guys faced Milwaukee, it was very, very bad. So it kind of feels like this first game is a must-have. Whoever pitches for Arizona, it feels like the Brewers just have to get that game. And then you hope you split with those two, you know, absolute aces on the mound, because it feels like those guys could still be major, major problems. As far as the Brewers, we think it's Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, right? That it's a pretty simple calculus there. Or do you anticipate some combination? You know, maybe Peralta goes game two if Burns wins game one. Like, how do you feel like things are stacking up for the Brewers?
Yeah, that's some galaxy brain stuff right there. I think it's going to be pretty straightforward, pretty standard. Burns, Woodruff, Peralta. I have posited previously on this podcast, I think you could use Freddie Peralta in like a hybrid role, at least for the first couple series. And then pitch Wade Miley in game three. I still honestly kind of feel like that would not be the worst thing in the world, but maybe not the thing you want to test out with on the fly as as you're starting the postseason and Freddie Peralta has not been in that role at all this year. I mean, this is probably the best pitching matchup of any wild card series. Actually, I don't think there's any probably to it. It absolutely is the best pitching matchup of any wild card series. And part of what helps that is neither of these offenses are like all that good. The Diamondbacks are weird. We were just talking about the homers a little bit. They have four guys who hit more than 24 or hit 24 or more bombs this year. That's pretty good. The Brewers had what, one, and he had exactly 24 homers.
Yeah, but they probably they have a longer lineup that way.
After that, they have one guy with 11, Evan Longoria, and then no one else in double digits.
Yeah.
Which is just a crazy way to disperse your homers and kind of tells you all you need to know about this lineup, really. And you know, that's kind of why you think advantage Brewers, right?
I just go back to how worried I am about Gallen and Kelly. I think those two guys just have had too much success.
So it's one start. Zach Gallen can absolutely shut you down in one start. His July ERA, though, was 4.45. August was better, 3.19. September, 4.17. So it's been kind of up and down without a lot of great in the second half. Merrill Kelly.
I was going to say emphasis on the up and down, because he's had a couple shutout performances, but also some blowups. It's not across the board.
That's kind of Corbin Burns-esque, but probably a little worse than Burns on the whole. Merrill Kelly, though, only two starts in July, battling some injuries, 3.27 ERA. Made six starts each of the last 2 months, though, 3.57 ERA, 3.22 ERA. I mean, he's walked a lot of guys this month, though. He's 17 walks in 36 innings. So that's one thing the Brewers offense is going to do. They're going to be patient. They're going to wait these starting pitchers out. And if you can kind of ratchet up the pitch count, I would generally think once the bullpens are in the game, it's advantage Milwaukee, I think.
I agree with that. Their bullpen is a little bit of an enigma, because they added some new guys over the past month or two. Guys that have performed pretty well. Overall, their bullpen is just okay. It's probably below average at most charitable, but I don't know who the guys are going to be. Like, if they added, you know, this kid whose name is already escaping me because it's a weird one, but like
Sal Frelick? I mean, Sal Frank?
Sal Frank, yes. Andrew Sal Frank.
Andrew Sal Frank?
I mean, he's a rookie. He just made his major league debut. He has not allowed a run in his first 10 innings or 10 and a third innings. Like, I don't know if that's good enough to make the playoff roster. I have no idea what they're going to do. Kevin Ginkle's been pretty good for them in the bullpen. Kyle Nelson. But like, they've got Ryan Thompson, who was formerly with the Rays, who was released, and he's been really effective since coming over to Arizona. So he's going to be, I imagine, on the postseason roster. Like, I've written down some names at jsonline.com, and I'm not even positive all those guys make the postseason roster. I don't have a really good feel for what they're going to be rolling with. I'd be really curious to what they do with their starters, because Zach Gallen pitched on Saturday, Friday. Merrill Kelly pitched on Saturday. So you could get you Gallen would be on regular rest for game two, but would they rather have Gallen go on short rest for game one? Because then maybe Merrill Kelly can go on short rest for game two if they're facing an elimination situation. I don't think they would do that, because Gallen has struggled. I can't imagine short rest is going to help that cause, but you're not going to want to get beat by anybody else with any other pitchers on the mound if you're Arizona, because they have such a clear delineation between their two best and everybody else. So I'm fascinated to know. The next 24 hours will be really interesting as we learn more about who's going to be on this roster for Arizona. I'm super interested.
Yeah, I think putting them both on short rest, I think that's a bad idea.
Yes.
I know it's kind of like the gladiator type thing to like have your starter go on short, like your best pitcher on short rest in a must win game for sure. I think that guys don't pitch as well. I don't have the numbers in front of me or anything, but the guys don't pitch as well as they normally do on 3 days rest. And you're probably not getting a full outing out of either guy. And with your bullpen questions, concerns, there's definitely some cracks in the armor there, the more guys you have to throw in a game. So if I'm the Diamondbacks, I'm going game one, throwing out the rookie Brandon Pfaadt, seeing what can happen. And then you kind of just hope and pray you win one of those first two games, and then you get to Merrill Kelly fully rested in game three, as opposed to like you pitch those guys on short rest and you know you go 1-1. Still got to throw Brandon Pfaadt out for game three, so you're kind of leaving yourself at a disadvantage by pitching those guys. You got to win both games, basically, if you're deciding to pitch those guys on short rest, and I don't think the odds of that are all that great. We'll see if that comes back. That quote comes back to bite me, but that's what I'm sticking with. And the Brewers have some pretty good pitchers, too, so I you can match up with them, but you want to have Gallen and Kelly at full strength.
Brandon Pfaadt, a, his numbers are not good. Like, Brewers fans are going to look at that and lick their chops a little bit because he's got an ERA well over 5.72, a whip of 1.4. He's a negative player by war. It's not quite that simple. He really, you know, he hasn't really been a regular on this team except since August. And he's had some really, really good outings. He's had about 4 or 5 of the, like, 12 outings he's had. Maybe 6 outings. They're just really, really good. And then some blow-ups in there as well. So that skews the numbers for him. But asking a lot of a rookie pitcher who hasn't even been here all season to be your game one starter in the playoffs,
It's absolutely a lot. The thing with Font is, like, coming into the year, he was kind of one of the bigger, the sexier names of pitching prospects. Great minor league numbers. Strikes out a bunch of guys. Looks like since the beginning of August, so I'm going to pick as my arbitrary date here off the, kind of off the top of my head. He's made 10 starts, 11 games. He has a 4.14 ERA. That's fitting, coming to Milwaukee. 3.89 FIP, 64 strikeouts in 50 2/3 innings. He's cut down on the walks. The homers. The homers are the issue for this young man. The TLDR here is get Tyrone Taylor in the lineup.
Yes, Tyrone Taylor had a home run on Sunday. He's playing his absolute best baseball. He's going to definitely be a factor in the playoffs. But you talked about how the Diamondbacks don't hit home runs. Well, the Brewers, you know, they went almost this entire week without hitting one, to be quite honest. They went, 5 games without one? They were still winning.
Five and third games, yes.
Yeah, so we know the Brewers don't hit home runs, so that's going to be interesting. But this is a refashioned lineup, and the Brewers, we know because we were there on Tuesday together watching them clinch the division in kind of spectacular fashion. The Cubs did not win a game before they were eliminated after the Saya Suzuki dropped flyball in Atlanta. That absolutely it was crazy. We will obviously talk more about that. Before we kind of go back into this week a little bit, what are some of the questions you have about this team as a playoff contender at this point? They've kind of addressed all their weaknesses during the course of the season, not like in resoundingly positive fashion, but not bad. What do you still need to know about this Brewers team? What still has to happen for this team to really be the best version of itself?
Who is going to get the ball to Devin Williams? I guess maybe it's not so much a question of who is going to get him the ball, but can they get him the ball consistently? I guess there's also a question of what role is Devin going to be using. Like, will he come in the eighth inning? Will he come in the seventh inning? I'd guess not, but in a must win, maybe. There's still just enough question marks in the bullpen, despite the great performance, just because it's kind of like guys who have not done this before and are doing it in different, sometimes unconventional ways. There's the Piamp struggles of September, although he's cleaned it up in his last couple outings. Piguero's coming off the injured list. I don't know what you can expect from him. There's the ever-present command questions for Abner Uribe. Hobie Milner has an ERA under 2, and you're still like, okay, how much, you know, is it going to work in the playoffs? That's outside of the offense. I think that's my number one question. Obviously, what version of Corbin Burnes are you going to get? We've gotten multiple different versions of him over the last couple of months. We've got best pitcher in baseball version, and we've got this man is getting lit up with cutters. So it's going to be very curious to see, kind of, might be able to tell pretty early on which Corbin Burnes you've got. Because, man, I'm telling you, if they get off, they get off to a 1-0 lead. You got Woodruff and you got Peralta. You feel pretty dang good about that.
Indeed. It's not just, you know, Milner. Obviously, Williams has an ERA under 2. Abner has an ERA under 2. And then you've got Piamps and Wilson for the year. Both those guys under 3. I don't know if we'll see a lot of Bryce Wilson in leverage, but we could if there's a short start. So, yes, the playoff roster will be interesting. I don't actually know offhand what the if the rules change after the wild card series in terms of 13 position players, 13 pitchers, obviously in a 3-game series, you're less likely to use some guys. So you can trim theoretically starting pitchers that you're not going to use in games 1 through 3, you know, guys like Colin Ray, Adrian Hauser, maybe even Wade Miley. Like, you don't need those guys necessarily in the first round, although I think Miley would make that cut. But I'd be interested to know. We'll find a lot more out about that on Monday. Maybe not even until Tuesday, but we should find out soon enough. Let's look back at this week a little bit because it was kind of a wild Tuesday. You and I, again, were both there at American Family Field. The Brewers were playing a very uninspiring 4-1 loss to the St. Louis Cardinals. That was pretty just low-key, run-of-the-mill game. But in the ninth inning... Everybody started getting wise to the fact that the Braves had taken the lead on the Cubs in the eighth inning. The Cubs were up 6-0 in that game. It was absolutely looking like the Brewers were going to have to wait until Wednesday to clinch. And remember, the Brewers got within one. Their magic number had been one on Friday. So Saturday didn't go their way. Sunday didn't go their way. They were off Monday. The Cubs were off Monday, too. So Tuesday is here, and it's looking like they're going to have to wait out yet another game. And at some point, you get a little tense, you know? Wednesday, Thursday is still on the table against the Cardinals, and the Cubs still have to play the Braves. But if those 2 days don't go right, now you've got a series against the Cubs that actually matters at the end of the year, where the Cubs could sweep and walk away with the division. So that was a doomsday scenario that probably is wildly unrealistic. But the tenor in that building changing was so weird. No one's caring about what's on the field. It's all like kind of news passing through the crowd that the Braves have taken the lead. Suzuki's dropped fly ball. I mean, I think we both audibly gasped or said something loud in the press box when that happened. Yeah. Watching it, I don't remember what I said. To be honest, wild, it was just like
wild. Yeah. Well, so a little bit of how the sausage is made is a fellow press box wag had the Gamecast pulled up, which what a bum. You were doing this too. What a bum thing to do when one fellow has the game up and others are watching the Gamecast. Just watch the game.
Listen to me. I do not have MLB TV. I am a poor man. I cannot afford that. So I watch a lot of Gamecasts. I do. I used to get MLB TV, but it really only matters like at the very tail end of the year. I don't want to pay that much money for just a handful of games. So
I more sauce to how the sausage is made. I have to have MLB TV because I do not pay for my own cable package. So if I want to watch the Milwaukee Brewers, a team I cover,
yes,
when I'm not at the ballpark, I have to VPN on my laptop and
Kurt, pull up the Brewers. Kurt, you are incriminating yourself. Go ahead and stop talking right now.
No, it's not incriminating. VPNs are legal, right?
I truly don't know. I do not know the answer to that. But
anyway, this is the thing that many do. I'm just a man of the people. Anyway, the Suzuki ball said in play outs, and someone shouted that from across the press box. And my response
in play
was,
runs, you mean? In play runs.
In play runs, yes. In play runs. And my response, because I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then you see the ball off Suzuki's bat, and I say, that's a misclick.
Yeah.
They put that in incorrectly.
Which does happen. For those who watch Gamecasts as I do, there are many times where it says in play outs, and then they change it to runs or vice versa.
It's a human that's, you know, the ball strike, you know, where the ball lands is in the zone is that's automated. But it's a human being inserting if it was called a ball, if it was called a strike, the whole play, that's all human. So sometimes, you know, you click the wrong thing. I was sure they just accidentally clicked the wrong thing in a huge moment.
Yes.
They did not.
No. Oh, my goodness.
Seiya Suzuki dropped the ball. What a week for the Cubs it was. Brutality.
Yeah, they lose that game in the eighth. They lose the following night in, I don't remember if they lost the lead in the ninth, and I think the game in extras.
Yes, they lost the ninth on Ozuna's homer.
Lost a very conventional game to the Braves on Thursday, and then lost to the Brewers in extras on Friday. They were eliminated Saturday when they were actually winning, and they won a game, and
I don't know which of those losses, those three walk-off losses, was worst.
Well, I have an opinion. It's the Suzuki one, though.
Two walk-off losses. Two losses in the Suzuki. Yeah, the Suzuki one's probably the worst. The least bad was a game where you give up a tying home run in the ninth, give up a guy's 70th stolen base, throw a fit about it, and then get walked off. That's still a pretty bad loss. The thing with Friday's game, if you think about it, JR, we were talking about it while it was happening. It's like, this is kind of opening a door for the Cubs a little bit. The Brewers had no interest, like, in the way they're managing that game. They had little to no interest in actually winning the game. That was secondary to not pitching any of their guys. And by not pitching any of their guys, they were throwing AAA arms. And the Cubs still couldn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And if they had, Sunday would have been very interesting. Would have been very, very interesting.
Cubs finished the year 7-15 to miss out on what looked like a pretty surefire bet that they were going to get one of those three wild card spots. For a while,
92%.
I was thinking, well, they're probably going to get the five. You know, like I wasn't thinking they were going to miss by a whole game or whatever, or two games, whatever it ended up being. But shocking collapse. I mean, honestly, it is an all time bad week for the Chicago Cubs. Now you go to Atlanta, you don't expect to exactly dominate, but Atlanta's destiny was mostly locked up. They still needed to clean up home field advantage, but that was going to happen. And they...
Yeah, you gotta take one there.
They just collapsed. It was really quite wild. I mean, the Marlins went to Atlanta and swept them. So that was earlier this month. So yeah, that might have been in Miami. I'm not even sure. But like still, that... Wow. So the Cubs are out. The Reds kind of fell out just a little bit. They were lingering into the penultimate day of the season, but were ultimately eliminated on Saturday. And you talked about that game on Friday. We'll talk a little bit more about the champagne celebration, I think, in 3-up, 3-down. But Friday, the really a magical moment, even though it comes in the context of games that don't really matter for the Milwaukee Brewers. But Caleb Bosley, it looks like Bushley, but it's pronounced Bosley, gets promoted by Milwaukee. He is a Hortonville High School product. He is a 29-year-old making his major league debut. He'd been around the minors a long time, 6 years, had spent the last 2 years with the AAA Nashville Sounds, had never gotten a chance to pitch in the big leagues. The Brewers, smartly, as you can imagine, rotating through a lot of pitchers this last week to try and rest some of their main guys. So you had appearances by Jansen Junk and Ethan Small and Colin Ray was back and Julio Teheran, like just a lot of guys that have been near the top of the system or in the big leagues before. But Caleb Bosley comes up. He makes his major league debut, big strikeout of Patrick Wisdom in a big spot, and then they send him back out for the ninth, gives up a tying home run to Ian Happ in the ninth inning to tie the game at 3, gets through some very tough Cubs hitters, and then they bring him back out for the 10th to pitch again. Runner starts at second. He manages to strand that runner, strands the bases loaded, and then gets the win when the Brewers walk it off with Carlos Santana in the bottom of the 10th. Now, I want to talk more about Caleb Bosley because that was just awesome. But it felt to me, Kurt, like the Brewers, I know that this is probably not true, and they were very cognizant of rest, and so they were going to roll with these guys who were not normal big leaguers because they just wanted to rest their guys. It felt like, Kurt, that they did not need or want that Friday night game, that they were interested in having it be competitive down to the final day of the season, which means everybody has to use their best pitchers, which means whoever the Brewers get to face, they would be facing a team that doesn't have their pitching lined up or anything close to lined up. It felt like they really could have cared less if they won that game, and then they won it anyway. So give me your thoughts. You were there on Friday night. What in the world, man? How do you describe Friday night?
Friday night was a confluence of baseball events in this wonderful sport in which the events never quite align the same in two consecutive games or two games over the course of the season at all. That was a confluence of events of which I will never see again.
Yeah.
It was just wild how it was all working in concert together. Like, the Brewers are throwing these career AAA arms. The Cubs are desperate, but, like, I don't want to say they weren't playing like they're desperate, but they sure weren't performing like they were desperate. The crowd was desperate. You got all these local kid and the fans and entire town of Hortonville was there.
Yeah.
It was just wild. It was wild. And it was a special night for Caleb Bosley. He gets optioned down the next day, but still, like, I don't think that probably did not knock him down at all. He's probably still riding a high. It is his birthday today, actually, his 30th birthday. So can't imagine having a much better birthday, a birthday weekend than that. Because the thing, like, every player aspires to make the major leagues and every player aspires to stay in the major leagues. But there is a certain reality check, self-awareness that comes along with, like, a veteran AAA innings eater that, you know, that's why you're there. You know your place on the AAA roster is you're not the hot prospect. You're not Robert Gasser. You're there to eat innings for that roster, and like the hope in the back of your head is you pitch well enough and kind of, you know, maybe if a spot opens up for you on the big league team, maybe something like a Jason Alexander last year. So like to get that moment, to get the call is just has to be surreal. And then for it to be in the, you know, your hometown team, to get a moment like that, you know, when you're not sure if you're ever going to make it to the big leagues and you're just an innings eater at AAA, it's just, it was something else. That's the best way to describe it.
I mean, I've been following him to some degree, knowing that he's a Wisconsin native, and just thinking, well, maybe he'll have a chance. A couple Wisconsin natives made their debuts this year, and I think I had him on my list a while back of somebody who could, but it just wasn't, you know, like there's a chance it never would have happened if not for these weird circumstances.
And maybe he makes it through for some team at some point, and that's not a knock on, not a knock on him at all. But like, this is kind of the way that big league teams think. There's generally just going to be someone that's like ahead of him on the pecking order. It kind of took this perfect circumstance of the Brewers clinching, them not caring. The Brewers could have gone with a lot of guys for that game. They could have gone Jansen Junk for that game and then figured it out. On Sunday's game when he pitched in relief, like had someone else come up and eat innings. So it, there were so many ways things that had to happen for it to work out like that. And for him to get in a close game too and be the only guy that's going to pitch the rest of the game as well, just remarkable. The 10th inning was kind of surreal to watch. Like, he got in trouble a little early, and it's like, oh, this is going to be bad. First and third, one out. They got the top of the order coming up, and then he gets these strikeouts. One of the moments of the year for sure. And there's been some good moments this year.
Yeah, there have. That. And I mean, again, not to disparage the guy. I hope it works out for him that he can get back to the big leagues. But that could very well be his only big league appearance. It could legitimately be one and done. And what a one it would be, you know, like to have, again, all his supporters, is like 400 people that were there. And to have that happen in a moment that ends in a victory. Wild, wild stuff. He got the Gatorade bath afterwards, even though Carlos Santana is the guy who got the walk-off hit. Really neat. And, you know, we'll see if he's back in some capacity in the organization going forward. Oh, speaking of people we're not sure are going to be back in the organization going forward, Craig Counsell, the manager, we've talked about this before, that he comes into 2024 not under contract, so it's unclear what he's going to do next year. It does not seem likely that he's going to be back on the bench with the Milwaukee Brewers. It seems like he's probably just going to take some time off, or, you know, just step away for a little bit, whatever the terminology would be. But there is this wrinkle in New York, the Mets parting ways with Buck Showalter. That was revealed on Sunday. Showalter, of course, a longtime veteran manager, and the Mets had a very bad year. David Stearns, former Brewers president of baseball operations, is now president of baseball operations with the New York Mets. It takes no genius to connect the dots here that Craig Counsell could potentially be the guy that the Mets go after. And if you look at any list of potential Mets managers next year, Craig Counsell is right there at the top. That, to me, still doesn't feel like what's going to happen. I don't feel like Craig Counsell's interest here is to bolt for another team. I think he is deeply, deeply connected to Milwaukee. I think it's just a matter of wanting to step away. That's my interpretation without having any true insight knowledge there. But, it, Buck Showalter stepping down is a big siren for Brewers fans, worried that their manager is going to jump ship to the bigger market. Give me a sense, because he talked about it a little bit after the game on Sunday, which I thought was super interesting. But give me a sense of where you're at with Craig Counsell. You can tell me if you think he's going to be manager of the year. I know you don't think highly of that award, but that's a possibility too. What are you thinking about Craig Counsell as we head into the playoffs?
Yeah, the timing of the question in the postgame press conference today was threw me off guard for sure, but I think it was in the context of the Mets stuff, and there's going to be more speculation as the playoffs go on. But Counsell did give an interesting answer about, you can read about it on jsonline.com, about how he's just, you know, how could you not be focused on this team and doing something special right now. This is not based off of anything other than like what I have surmised, what I think is going to happen. My guess is going to be he's not the manager next year, nor is he the manager for the Mets, nor is he the manager for another big league team. That's kind of just me speculating, nothing concrete exactly behind that or anything. But it kind of does add an undertone to this playoff run. Maybe he does come back, but there sure as heck seems like there's a lot of a chance that he doesn't. I mean, let's look at the facts of it. The Brewers would love to have him back. He could probably get whatever contract he wants from the owner that would love to keep him and not lose him out on a bidding war to the Mets. But has chosen to go kind of as a lame duck all year and not sign a contract, not sign an extension, anything like that. So that's why I think that will be the end result. But I could be absolutely wrong, and I would not be surprised one bit if I am incorrect. I have no idea what he is going to do. I do think Craig Counsell is the manager of the year. I don't see how you can give it to anyone else in the National League. I mean, sure, you can. Like, it's kind of a silly award in general, and sort of like who outperforms their, you know, what you expected from their team the most. And in that case, maybe it's going to go to Skip Schumacher. But I don't know, man. I don't know. The Marlins won what, 7-8 fewer games than the Brewers did this year. Like, Skip Schumacher did a heck of a job with the Marlins team that had a lot of things thrown at them. But you know who had a lot of things thrown at them as well is the Brewers, whose offense was terrible for 4 months. Four plus months, and they had, you know, like no bullpen roles figured out whatsoever because they had Devin Williams and a bunch of new guys until, you know, 2 months into the year. I just think it was a great, this might have been Counsell's best managing job yet to get him to this point. I mean, think about how many times on this podcast we talked about what the heck is this team? Who are they? Are they good? Are they mediocre? Are they maybe bad? We don't know. And here they are with 92 wins. So,
yeah, that's good.
I don't have a man. I don't have a vote. We're voting for different awards this year, not manager of the year. But I'm very curious to see if this is the year he gets it. My gut says it's going to go to Schumacher because that's kind of how the award often goes.
Yeah, that's my thought too.
I think it would be a really nice award for Counsell to get, for the Brewers to get. I think for Brewers fans would enjoy it too. But the reality is, managers of the year are often, look at the track record. They're fired within like 2 years. Gabe Kapler's gone.
Yeah, Gabe Kapler's gone.
Mike Schilt was the manager there in 2020. He's gone. I don't know who won it in 2019. Maybe Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts is good. He's slow. But anyway, they get fired a lot. But it feels like it would just be like an acknowledgement of Counsell being a great manager, like that he's been for 7-8 years.
Yeah. It's going to come down to, you know, and being somebody now who's able to vote for this stuff, you kind of realize it. It's like, it all, you know, we could talk about who should or who would. It's just going to come down to what's in the heads of the pretty small body of voters. And it's just going to be what they value, you know, like, do you value a big comeback? Like basically what Skip Schumacher has authored in Florida, Miami has this insane record in one run games. You can attribute some of that to the manager, and they were a lousy team and they rallied back. Torey Lovello has taken the Diamondbacks from 110 losses to the playoffs in 3 years. So that's in consideration. Dave Roberts, Dodgers team, or, you know, Snitker's Braves team are the two best teams in the National League. So why wouldn't they get consideration? I think it's going to be pretty evenly spread. I think because it is all narrative based, you could see people just saying Craig Counsell has finished second 3 times and fourth twice. He's got to get an award because this is his last season in Milwaukee. Somebody's got to give that to him before he leaves. So I think you could get some votes that way too. We're going to find all that out. That's in the distant future. I mean, heck, within a week, the next time we podcast, I mean, we're going to try to do some of these during the week too, I presume. But next time we talk, we may know all of this. The Brewers may be eliminated and Craig Counsell may tell us what he wants. It gets
this
very
year
sudden.
Might be over.
Yeah, it gets sudden in a hurry. So before we get to 3 up, 3 down, just a quick question about the playoff roster. You're taking your stab at who you think is going to make that list. That posts at jsonline.com in the morning. As you're hearing this, it should be up or will be up very soon. I guess if it's not up, this is a spoiler alert, but you are acting on your take of the week for your Kurt Blonde from last week. You think Jesse Winker still has a chance to get that final roster spot. I still think you're a little bit crazy, talk about that and then give me a sense of like what the questions are for this first round of playoff rosters.
So, I guess it's kind of intertwined because the question is how many pitchers and how many hitters do you carry? I'm going to surmise the Brewers are going to carry 15 hitters and 11 pitchers. They carried 11 pitchers in an NLDS, that's 5-game series, 2 years ago. So I think I just think they're gonna, that's what they'll carry in a shorter series, in the wild card. So that gives you a lot of opportunities on the bench. And the last roster spot, when we did our playoff roster prediction, for the paper, was essentially came down to Winker and Jesse Weimer, if assuming you have Mitchell on, which I can't tell if Garrett Mitchell's a starting center fielder or not going to be on the roster at all. You could tell me either one's going to happen in game one, and I would fully believe you. But if you have Mitchell and Blake Perkins, who I think is a lock on the roster, then for us it was Weimer or Winker. If they play the Marlins, I think it's Weimer because all the lefties they have, but the Diamondbacks don't really have a lot of lefties. So we went with Jesse Winker for the exact reasons we outlined last week. You want a guy that can come off the bench and like draw a walk, give you good at bat, good strike zone discipline. That's probably who you're going to take out of that group. Abe Toro might be in the mix. Owen Miller could also be in the mix. Trying to think if there's anyone else. I think that's pretty much it. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
All right. Well, we'll see. I still am not clear if they're going to have the sort of 13-13 pitchers and position player designation that they had during the 26-man roster stretch of the season.
That wouldn't make any sense for them to do, honestly.
Well, it wouldn't, but you could see why they would stick to that. I don't know. You're right. In a 3-game series.
Yes. One of the questions I still have on the roster is like, is Wade Miley on it? I think, yes, you want Wade Miley on it. I'm pretty sure he's going to be. But the one question that arises is he would start then, like he would be in line to start game one of the NLDS, correct, on Saturday.
Yes, if they need all three guys, yes.
But if he's on the NL wild card roster, what if you have to use him for, I guess maybe the answer is figured out later, but what if you have to use him for 4 innings in extra innings or go 3 innings? In game two on Wednesday, like then he can't pitch game one, then you're left going Adrian Hauser. And I don't think that's optimal against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Maybe Colin Ray, I don't think that's optimal either. Maybe they put him in the bullpen and use him like for only an inning on Wednesday or Tuesday or Thursday. Well, Thursday, he'd still be down probably for Sunday. But that sort of is the question of like, can you use him in this series and then still pitch him potentially game one of the NLCS? That might be a problem for a later day, but it's certainly something the Brewers also do need to think about and consider. No Wade Miley would leave them with only one lefty in the bullpen, though, and it's Hobie Milner. Well, unless you put Andrew Chafin in. I don't think Andrew Chafin's on the playoff roster. So that opens the door maybe for Colin Ray. But at the end of the day, we did pick Wade Miley.
The Brewers will be in a huge advantage if they can win 2 games without needing that third game, because theoretically you could roll with just Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta starting games all the way through, I want to say, the first few games of the NLCS. I'm not sure when Wade Miley would actually be needed.
That sounds right.
Yeah, so I know it certainly carries through the division series and into the first couple games of the CS. I think game 4 of the NLCS would be the first time that you would have somebody off regular rest of those big 3 because of the off days that are baked into this. You know, going in, if the Brewers do advance, for example, to the NLDS and go to Los Angeles, they would play their first game, they would have an off day, and then play the second game, and then have another off day so they can travel back to Milwaukee for the 2 games after that. So it's going to be a really interesting schedule, and it certainly benefits a team that has big-time pitching, as the Milwaukee Brewers do. There are some benefits to what the Brewers have going on. You're starting to see Bob Nightingale of USA Today wrote, they're the team he's picking to win the World Series. It is. You can make that defense. Yes, Bob Nightingale does not have the best track record with seeing the future, but it is defensible that the Brewers have what it takes to work deep into the playoffs. Remember, last year, the 5th seed and the 6th seed, the Padres and the Phillies, they went to the NLCS. The Dodgers and Braves, they did not make it past their first round, the division series round. So, obviously, that would be bad for the Brewers because the Brewers are playing a 6th seed, but I'm just saying that the randomness has already shown itself in this format. It is no guarantee, just because the Braves and Dodgers are markedly better on paper, no guarantee that happens in the postseason, and that the Brewers could be the team that keeps going. So let's move on to some of the more granular details from the week. It's the regular season finale edition of 3 Up, 3 Down. Easy up, 1, 2, 3. Kurt, we got to go back to that champagne celebration, revisit it a little bit. I had a lot of fun covering that. That was very cool. Got some great video, I think, from the clubhouse and the field in the aftermath of the Tuesday night clinch celebration. Never has a team celebrated a 4-1 loss, a listless 4-1 loss, with the fervor that the Milwaukee Brewers did. Of course, they still won that series two games to one over the Cardinals, and so it ended well. What sticks out for you? Just so we'll start. You could just give me a couple things, I guess. Things that, images from that post-game celebration, or things that you really enjoyed.
My eyes.
Your eyes? Were they burning? Did they? I didn't get that. I got champagne in my eyes, but they weren't burning, man. I don't know.
It was right away. I got in right away, and I got some direct hits.
Dang.
Some. Yeah. So my eyes hurt.
you're taller, so you're in the line of fire.
Yeah, I did wash all my clothes. I did get a little dousing, but the clothes were not ruined. But there's maybe a little bit of, you know, a little bit of residue on the pants, a little bit. That's what sticks out to me. Gross. It's all about me. Hello.
I enjoyed Corbin Burns immediately trying to find the camera equipment, the expensive camera equipment, once the media was let into the clubhouse. He's like, where's that expensive equipment? And he's firing champagne at it. Sal Frelick, Abner Uribe, among those who were absolutely living their best lives. A lot of rookies in that room. It struck me that it's a little not awkward, but, you know, guys like Joey Weimer and Owen Miller, who were here almost the whole year, they weren't there. You know, they're not on the roster right now, so they're trying to stay ready in Arizona. And, you know, like, it felt a little unfortunate because I feel like those guys were such a big part of this. And I'm sure there are roster rules that indicate who can be there and who can't be there. But it would be nice to see those guys get a shot as well to sort of celebrate that they were a big part of this. But that's just not how it worked out. And standard fare. I don't know if there was any like too over the top crazy moment that really sticks out. You could tell you can really get a sense of the camaraderie of the team in that moment, and the guys who are really good friends and kind of the groups of friends, and you can really see that come to light. Obviously, there's a lot of characters on this team. We know that, and they were having a really good time. Willie Adames was having a really good time. Carlos Santana was having a really good time. So it was really a really fun night for Brewers and their fans as well.
I'm gonna go off of something that is sort of related to the celebration. Was a storyline earlier in the week. Josh Donaldson and Rowdy Tellez are fine.
Oh yeah, talk about that.
They have no beef. There. If you missed it somehow, there was a Rowdy Tellez in his of the sarcastic way that only he can talk.
Yes.
Told a story about an interaction he had with Josh Donaldson when Donaldson first joined the team, where basically Donaldson told him, you know, I don't need to introduce myself to you. You know who I am, blah, blah, blah. People took that. I think it was John Boy.
John Boy had a full breakdown.
And aggregated it and made a separate video about how this is a bad look. Bad look for Josh Donaldson. Everything's fine. Like, Josh Donaldson has gotten along great in the clubhouse. I'm not saying there haven't maybe been like some past dust ups in clubhouses. I can't speak to that, whether they have or not been, but everything is fine. The players like Josh Donaldson. He doused Rowdy Tellez with a couple of beers on Tuesday night while shouting, "You're my favorite teammate." So yeah, that about sums it up.
There's no, we don't have to hide from the fact that there is some history in Josh Donaldson's past. So if there's any sort of hint that he might not be the, you know, like getting along with teammates or something, people are going to jump on that. And I can't speak to any of those. I didn't witness them closely. It doesn't seem like there's any acrimony whatsoever. And you just kind of have to know how Rowdy Tellez talks. Like, he goes on, he's a first class smack talker, and he's a deadpanner. So he says stuff very matter of fact with no emotion, no expression. And he says things that are just outright, you know, lies because he's trying to be funny, or he's being funny. I mean, your mileage may vary, but this was a situation where I think people didn't understand Rowdy's typical sort of shtick. And they ran with it thinking that he was being completely honest and forthright and frustrated with Josh Donaldson. They have their paths kind of crossed in Toronto before. So I presume they had a little bit of knowledge of each other beforehand. So I don't know, man. It was hard to write about because it was like, I want to be able to tell people that this is not a thing. But also, it was just going to make it more of a thing. So we didn't have anything online about it.
So let's just come on the podcast a week later and say, it's not a thing.
It's okay, not a thing.
That's squashed. Move on.
Not a thing. Okay, so for me, Corbin Burns, 200 strikeouts. He got to that threshold. He was able to pitch on Thursday, his last tune-up before he starts game one of the wild card round. He didn't pitch long into the game. Was it 4 innings? 5 innings? I don't even remember. I should really be more researched when I start these things. But 200 strikeouts is no joke. That's a tremendous threshold to hit. And Burns, just another really good season. I mean, there's no way about it. Like, there were definitely hiccups along the way. He's not a frontline Cy Young candidate or anything like that. So it maybe isn't his best season. But, you know, like a not best season is pretty impressive. It's his third straight year with 200 strikeouts. I think there's only one other Brewers pitcher, Giovanni Gallardo, who's accomplished that. Or Ben Sheets has done that too. Again, I'm really well researched here. But, It was nice to see him get that to that threshold before they pulled him from the game. He almost threw 200 innings this year, 193 after throwing 200 innings last year. Again, that was the knock on him in his Cy Young season, that he didn't throw enough. He had 167 innings of work that year. So he has gone out, had back-to-back really great, healthy seasons, 32 starts. Tremendous work. And now Corbin Burns is going to be your game one postseason starter. So once again, he'll be the guy that they turn to.
Yeah, he got some black ink this year on his Baseball Reference page. Led the National League in whip.
Ooh, 1.069. Nice number.
He didn't even lead. I mean, he had a better whip in 2021, but didn't even lead the league in whip when he was Corbin freaking Burns in 21. But leads the whip this year.
Yeah, that is his fourth best whip. Fourth best in his career. Fifth best.
Three straight years with a top five whip in the National League. We'll see. I mean, the Corbin Burns starts as a Brewer might be dwindling down here. We can count them on one hand.
We are going to have to talk about that if we think for
maybe
sure.
Maybe on one finger. We'll see. that's a conversation for a different day. Another guy who will we see him again as a Brewer in the regular season? Ethan Small, of course, the name that was coming to your mind when I said that. He got a save this week, JR.
Really cool.
Ethan Small has a big league save, and good for him. The guy has his prospect status has dwindled significantly since he was, well, the top pitching prospect in the org last year. Also kind of goes to show where the system was and where it is now. Nothing hasn't really like changed all that much in Small's profile. He still walks way, way, way too many guys. And that's the concern. He's a reliever only now. Who knows what his future holds for the Brewers. I would be very skeptical he makes it through the entire winter on the 40-man. Maybe he does. But he got the save in Thursday's win over the Cardinals. Had a nice little cushion there, walked a couple, but got out of it. So it was nice to see Ethan Small get that opportunity.
Garrett Mitchell is back. He played all week.
Oh, yes.
Not Tuesday. Maybe it was Wednesday.
Yeah, he played Thursday. They activated him, I believe.
Oh, okay. So not till Thursday. But Garrett Mitchell puts himself in strong consideration for that playoff roster. He looked really good. You talked about him a little bit earlier in this podcast, but had a double. Great to see him back there. When he injured his shoulder early in the year, was that in Arizona, come to think of it? I don't remember where that was. That might have been in San Diego. Seattle, right.
Seattle.
It did not look like he would be back all year. No one really thought about him being back this year, but he made it back and he fought through. You know, he got into a rehab start, took a little while for the offense to come back, for his timing to come back, but I think he's probably as good a bet as any to make this playoff roster. Is certainly as a speed guy off the bench, if nothing else. It's just a really cool story to see him back. The outfield is crowded for the Brewers going forward. Fascinating offseason question marks around it, but it was just nice to see him back and having a little bit of success. And now we'll see if he gets a spot on that roster. I think we're done with three up, three down, or was there one more thing you wanted to throw in?
No, I got one left. I have one left.
Bring it.
And I would also like to acknowledge Moose Hogue potentially making his podcast debut.
Oh, hello, Moose.
I don't know if you can hear him. I don't know if it'll come through, but he is snoring and he's about 5 feet away from me. So I apologize if you hear snoring.
I do not hear snoring, but we can imagine it's
okay.
There.
So you don't. Well, you might, because this brother can get a little loud with it. To be clear,
Moose is a dog. He is the is a golden retriever that you got there.
He's a golden retriever. Oh yeah, was that not a
I lost you for a second, but no one knows who Moose Hogue is.
It's not apparent. That's not apparent by the name Moose. I guess it could be a third baseman
or a child. People name their children weird things, dude. Moose is completely in bounds.
This is true. Eric Lauer, JR.
Interesting.
On Saturday, I didn't think we would ever see Eric Lauer again. What a weird, bizarre year it was, and a kind of a fitting ending to the weird, bizarre year where his stuff was way down. The location was way off, and he got schmickety smacked around the ballpark. Just an unexpected year in terms of the performance and production you did or did not get out of Lauer. He was the number three starter to begin the year. He pitched the third game of the year in Chicago, and it didn't click from the beginning of spring training. It just was never there. The stuff was not what we have seen from like peak Eric Lauer, who's never been like an elite stuff guy, but he's able to use like a 93, 94 mile an hour fastball to his advantage because it's got that zoom. It's got that like that rise and that run, that late life, and hitters pop it up or miss it entirely. And he did not have that this year, and that's why he gave up a lot of home runs. A tough year for him, no doubt. Frustrating year for him and the Brewers. I think we've seen the end of Eric Lauer, though.
Yeah, I don't imagine he'll be back.
As a Brewer, at least.
Right.
As a Brewer, at
least. Yep, they might try to rehab him a little bit, like rehab his value or something. I don't know, but tough finish for him. We saw a lot of pitchers this week. Ethan Small, you've seen like still photos of him pitching, delivery-wise. Super interesting.
Yes.
The aesthetics are very strange. Funky. Yes, funky. Yes. It's enjoyable to see.
Many, many limbs pointing in many different directions.
Yeah, I don't know what the future holds for him, but I am glad that he sort of reclaimed some of his career, turning into a pretty reliable reliever in Nashville and gets a save. Nice finish to his season as well. A couple things we could have talked about in 3-up, 3-down. We could have talked about the decision to rest Brandon Woodruff and Freddie Peralta to not throw those guys in the last series of the year. It certainly makes sense, but those guys will be pitching for the first time in a long time when they tow the mound for the wild card series here. Andrew Chafin's double plays, always an adventure. I think that was on Wednesday night, maybe? I'm not sure. The days, again, all run together. Rowdy Tellez made a couple diving stops in that game. Looked really good. Again, Tellez's postseason roster situation, unclear. You know, if Jesse Winker's on it, Tellez probably isn't. So that's interesting. Brewers got an out at the plate on Saturday. Perkins to Adames. Another nice relay there. And Jansen Junk, 2 2/3 innings on Sunday. And he looked good in his second appearance of the year. He made the one start against Arizona, actually. And I wasn't sure we'd see him again. And then he was one of the many guys they rotated through, and he was awesome on Sunday, Kurt. I'm fascinated by these two innings of work. 96 miles an hour, baby.
He hit 96.
Yeah.
I was totally out on Jansen Junk, and then he hit 96 as a reliever. And I was kind of like, oh.
Yeah. I am
fascinated
there.
What have we here?
Yes, yes. All right, that's going to do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. Let's move into the past just for a little bit. It is Remember When.
Red Hot Memories, I stole these.
Well, Kurt, I'm talking about the 2011 Game 5 of the NLDS at this point because the Brewers are about to play the Diamondbacks in the postseason again for the first time since that series. For those who remember it, the Brewers won 2 games at Miller Park, won them, I would say, not handily, but definitely were comfortably, went to Arizona, got destroyed in a couple games, came back and played one of the most tense games I can ever remember in my lifetime, to be quite honest. It was a wild time. You are quite a bit younger than me. I'm not sure what your memory of 2011 may be, but what are the lasting images?
Dude, I'm not that young.
Yeah, you are that young, but I know you remember 2011. No,
I thought you were calling to question like, do you remember 2011?
I know you remember 2011, but like, I don't know. When I was that young, I was more interested in going outside than I was watching a Brewers game, probably. So what sticks out for you?
I considered going. I had cross country practice. I had an option to go to New Berlin West to watch the my high school football team play. Go Brown Deer, go Falcons, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Yes.
UR Rob, Brown Deer High School, things of that nature. I stayed home. I watched the game. It was electric. It was a good time.
Yes, I was covering a high school football game, Arrowhead Waukesha West. It was a huge matchup. Joe Schobert was involved. He was Joe the Waukesha Show. West running back.
Was this a Ben Bredesen era or before that?
I believe it was before the Ben Bredesen era, but it was one of my worst jobs covering a high school game because I was very, very tuned into what was going on the field. It was a 3-2 win in 10 innings. Of course, Nigel Morgan single up the middle against JJ Putz, ends up scoring Carlos Gomez racing around from second base to score the winning run. Brewer Brewers, of course, advance to the NLCS. They wind up losing to the Cardinals when they get there. Niger Morgan, cult hero, doesn't really need an introduction. Of course, he had this alter ego, Tony Plush, T-Plush, whatever you wanted to call it. But he was a guy they traded for right before the start of the season. They actually traded Cutter Dykstra, the son of Lenny Dykstra, minor leaguer, for Morgan Services from Washington. He had a 778 OPS. I think he had a batting average above 300. I mean, he was really good. He hit a couple walk-offs. He was kind of an instigator, kind of a tough personality for some clubhouses, but the Brewers made it work. They had a lot of veterans, and he fit in with them, and they were able to pull this game out. The Brewers had a 2-1 lead in the ninth, so John Axford came in. He led the league with 46 saves. He had an ERA under 2, but he allows a leadoff double to Gerardo Parra, future Brewer Gerardo Parra, and there were runners at the corners with nobody out after that. Axford and Prince Fielder kind of came together trying to field a Willie Bloomquist bunt, and they kind of Fielder kind of had to dive out of the way. It was a big mess, and they didn't get an out. So the run scored, two runners were on, and at that point nobody was out, and the Diamondbacks had tied the game. But Axford gets out of it from there. He goes 1-2-3. They'd actually had a really intense eighth inning where K-Rod got the last out at second base. Unieski Betancourt, I think, was involved there. He had a great postseason, as I'm sure everyone who follows us here is aware. Axford gets through the ninth, gets through the 10th after the Brewers don't score, and they go to work in the 10th. No runners at second base in the 10th inning. There will not be in this postseason either. They do away with that rule in the postseason, so you will not see. If a game goes extras, it is going to be solved just as it has been in all eternity. No surprise runners at second base. But of course, on a 2-2 pitch, Arizona closer putts. He's the guy who throws this ball to Morgan, who just slaps it on the ground back up the middle. Crazy stuff. It is a little disheartening, I think, the way that baseball works, where it's national broadcasters. Like, I would love to have that highlight with one of the TV guys that we normally see on a regular basis, like Brian Anderson or Jeff Levering or, you know, Rock, Bill Schroeder. It'd be nice to see that instead of like the TBS broadcast or whatever it was, but that's just the way it goes. And again, just a great time, great finish. Place went absolutely bonkers. I mean, just impossible to recreate the energy that you could feel coming through the TV from that building. And we will see if the Brewers can replicate that. Maybe not replicate that. Maybe something a little bit less dramatic and winning in two games. That would be a little bit more preferable, I have to think, for Brewers fans this time around. All right, that'll do it for our look at the past. Let's close it down. It is our weekly take of the week. It is Kurt Blanch.
Ryan Braun sends it to
Well, you actually a little bit stole what I was going to go with.
Were you going to talk about Niger Morgan?
No, I was going to talk about broadcasters.
Oh.
And I like how the NBA and the NHL have it set up. The home broadcast gets to, like, the Bucks crew gets to do what? The first round? Maybe the first two rounds? Is it the first two rounds?
It's just the first round.
Of the playoffs?
Just the first round.
Just the first round, I think. NHL might be first two rounds. Either way, the local crews get to do, you know, they still have the national broadcast, but the local crews get to do a playoff round or two. And I think that would be more than fitting and more than fair for these baseball announcers that, you know, Jeff Levering does 162, well, maybe not 162 because Apple TV games or whatnot, but, you know, they do 150, 162 Brewers games. They're there every day all season to make the playoffs, and then their reward for doing all that is, well, I guess they don't have to work, but I think they would want to work. I know they would want to work. I know they would want to call these games. So I'd love it if there was a nice in-between of, hey, the Brewers will still be on national TV, they'll still be on ESPN. But I mean, you can't think of how electric the call in 2011 would have been when Rock was just screaming. He would have been screaming over Brian Anderson the entire time.
Yeah.
like you think some of his calls before where he's just interjecting shouts of yes were just charmingly great. Imagine what he would do in a playoff game. So I think those guys deserve it. And yeah, but I got another take for you too.
Okay, I'm happy to take all
wanna
takes.
Want to double up? All right,
let's go.
Brewers are going to sweep. It's going to be a sweep.
Wow, I wasn't prepared for that. That's some optimism that I cannot share.
It's going to be a sweep. It's going to be a sweep that involves one dramatic win. Why? I don't know. Vibes.
Vibes. Yes. Well, vibes. Kurt, when you get to the playoffs, vibes are all you have. We could break this down and talk about
vibes.
Matchups and all this, but the fact of the matter is Brandon Pfaadt, the one pitcher that the Brewers would prefer to face of the three that are probably going to pitch, he could throw a, you know, 7-inning shutout, and then the Brewers could pound Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly and win the series. There's no way to know any of this. So vibes are where it's at, Kurt. I think the Brewers will lose this series. I saw what happened last year, and I just don't know if I quite feel it, but I, you know, there are many parts of my brain, including one that thinks this team will win the World Series. So, like, what do I know? There's lots going on up north here, and anything is possible, Kurt. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible, including trading for Dame Lillard.
Including trading for Dame Lillard. What a week. By the way, great way to celebrate the Brewers getting their magic number to zero. That happened on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, the Bucks acquired number zero. Well done, everybody. Great synergy. Love what you're doing here. Bucks Media Day is Monday, and then the Brewers playoffs begin on Tuesday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, if necessary. We know that 6:08 p.m. Central are the start times for those first two games. Game three very much up in the air in terms of time, but we know it'll be the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Milwaukee Brewers. Winner goes to L.A. to face the Dodgers. And Kurt, I'm sure we're going to try to do at least one podcast during the series, maybe two, maybe three, who knows? But we definitely are going to have some check-ins, I think. Yeah. We got to talk to our people. We got to talk during this series. So, we will be in touch with you at some point this week. Any last thoughts, Kurt?
Toodaloo.
Enjoy the baseball, guys. This is obviously the time of year you're waiting for. A lot of baseball to suffer through for 6 months to get to this very stuff, this very point of the season. Okay, here is my interview with Jim Henderson, bullpen coach of the Milwaukee Brewers. He has a lot to say about the guys in the bullpen. Like you said really early on, this is maybe the most interesting component for the Brewers is who's going to get the ball to Devin Williams, and he of course has overseen all of it, and a former Brewers closer in his own right. He has a bobblehead, a Brewers bobblehead. I've talked about that a little bit. So here he is, Jim Henderson. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back again very soon. Bye-bye. My guest is Jim Henderson, bullpen coach for the Milwaukee Brewers. Brewers fans may know him as a relief pitcher, former closer for the Milwaukee Brewers. So we'll start with sort of your baseball story. You are Canadian, as many people know. A lot of Canada in the Brewers organization.
Yeah.
But then made your way down south to Tennessee and Texas for college. So how did that happen? What brought you down south?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a comfort thing. Two other teammates of mine up in Canada wanted to go down to Midland as well. So, and they were just starting their program as well. So it was like starting their baseball program in Midland. It was an opportunity to play every day and also be around some guys that you knew growing up. So it was a good opportunity, I thought, just to I heard good things about Texas Junior College baseball and the talent level, so it seemed like a good opportunity to keep on developing the game.
What are the highlights from your playing career that you point to? I mean, you didn't necessarily get to play for some of the best Brewers teams per se, but you know, 28 saves one year, had some very good numbers one year. So what sort of things do you really stick with you and kind of when people ask you about it?
I think being part of some winning teams, though. I mean, 2012 when I got called up, we were kind of written off. And we kind of made a little push at the end there, and it started to feel that kind of juice of the city kind of jump back after the team made it in 11. So that was a good little run there, and at the end of 12, and then probably just being part of the Mets team in 16 that made it to the wild card and being a playoff team. I was in and out of the roster just on the IL there, but you know, felt like I contributed at the beginning of the year to that kind of run. And it was just exciting to be part of, I was there on the playoff team and we lost to Bumgarner.
Yeah, I know. How many Jim Henderson bobbleheads do you have? Those only exist.
they gave me 100. They're still collecting.
They gave you 100?
They gave me 100. They're still collecting dust somewhere in my house in Arizona.
That's incredible. You got to be able to find some takers for that.
Yeah,
really
I should
cool.
be able to.
There's a story that you kind of became a bullpen coach in 2018, I think, while you were on the 60-day injured list. I don't know the circumstances. What
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was just transactional wise, just to get me on payroll, honestly. But it was just they had a role for me. I scouted a little bit in extended spring training. I helped out coaching, and then I was on the backfields when the games started, just kind of watch the younger talent level and get my toes wet a little bit in the scouting department as well. So. and then I scouted the fall league after that season. So it gave me an opportunity to kind of see that side of it, but also at the same time, it was a really good opportunity to coach. Yeah, so yeah. It was a dual role.
Did the scouting thing come pretty easily to you? Was that a natural transition?
It was and wasn't. I probably had an easier time scouting the pitchers.
Sure, of course, yes.
So I had to learn. But then at the same time, you read swings as a pitcher in your career. So it was not too difficult, but just kind of the ins and outs and the little intricacies you look for, other scouts would help you with was valuable to learn.
Yeah. So my understanding is your 2011 Pan American baseball team is in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd be curious to know what that's like and what that induction process was like, how cool that was, and also just kind of the Canadian baseball scene in general. Like I mentioned, you know, Doug Melvin, Gord Ash, Tyler Black, we were talking about Tyler Black. Like, there's a lot of Canada around this organization. So how do you describe Canadian baseball to people who don't know a lot about it?
It's a tight-knit group. It really is. I played on those national teams starting in 2009, I believe. Like, went to Italy and then Puerto Rico. We went to Sweden. Went all over the world. And it was a kind of a group together that continues to try to grow the game in Canada. So Adam Stern owns a facility in London, Ontario, who was a brewer at one point. Yeah, Brooks McNiven and Rene Tassoni and these guys, who are also brewers, they in the minor leagues, they got facilities going in British Columbia. So, like, this group kind of, like, we're all together, and we knew the importance of developing the game now in Canada, and they've really tried to, like, kind of push it on this next level of players. So that's how we see it. We see it as, like, hey, we're up against the world. We're always underdogs, and that kind of brings you together as a group, and then it brings you together as another group trying to develop the next group of players, so it's kind of cool.
Do you introduce yourself as Baseball Hall of Famer Jim Henderson?
No. No, unfortunately, I wasn't even part of that induction ceremony.
Oh,
they do it during the season. I was probably playing or something. But I think Gord Ash and Doug have gone many times, and they've represented. We had a couple guys, Brock Kelgard, who was a minor leaguer with us.
Yeah.
I think he was available at the time. He went to that induction. So,
sweet.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. Yeah.
So this bullpen's obviously been one of the strengths of the team this year. I want to start with a couple guys that Elvis Piguero and Yoel Piamp that I don't think Brewers fans knew a lot about or were necessarily counting on. They're obviously new to the organization. What was your first impression of those guys, and what were the things that you did or anyone did to sort of help them become two of the more valuable guys in this bullpen this year?
Yeah, I think we just kind of picked away a little in some delivery things, some movement of the pitches, just picked away at some things that we already valued them, I think, when coming in, and that's why our front office acquires these guys. And then it was just refining a few other things. So Piguero, just delivery-wise, is kind of get a good pace and time it up correctly, and it's kind of helped. It kind of coincided with the help of his sinker kind of moving it a bit. And then Piam's in spring training, just I know there's talk about a slider, and there was a little bit of work with that, but I also think that there was a bit of a blessing with Piam's, that he's kind of a multi-inning reliever in his career, and now he got proved that he could handle late inning role here, and you get to one inning and you see the velo jump up a little bit, so kind of a blessing there. You know, we're thankful that happened. It kind of just happened organically, so those two guys have been, you know, pretty valuable.
You think there's a connective tissue between Devin Williams, Josh Hader, you know, even guys like Jeremy Jeffress before that? I mean, the Brewers have had really good bullpens here for a while, and a lot of the coaches have changed, a lot of the rosters have changed, but that's always been kind of their rock. I mean, what would you point to?
Yeah, I'm going to be biased and say it's come from Trevor Hoffman, even. Hoffman to Axford, to myself, to K-Rod, to Knebel, to Jeffries and those guys, and then passed on to Hader. So, like, I mean, that kind of work ethic, I think, has been a big thing, how to control the ninth inning. It's been brought down from guy to guy, and I think it, I mean, for me, that's where I saw it start from.
Sure.
There was a great closer before Hoffman as well, but he was kind of one of those guys that really kind of brought it to the forefront of how to handle yourself in the late innings out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I ask what makes Devin Williams so special, the changeup is the obvious answer, but there are a lot of opportunities for him to have had a down, a fallow period, and he just doesn't happen. He just stays lights out all the time. What would you point to? What makes that work?
Well, if you look at the command of his fastball as well, and just the command of his fastball and his changeup has picked up over the past 3 years. He studies the game. He's well prepared. He's now been out there enough that he's comfortable in any spot you put him in. If things do get crazy on him, he's able to slow it down. Pitch clock doesn't matter. He's still out there with a low heartbeat. So there's just there's just this experience now, and just like no moment is too big for him, and I think that comes with the experience. But also, like, he's not going to let an inning get away from his command now as well. So those things together have helped him. Yeah.
Then you got somebody like Abner Uribe, who is very exciting for people who follow Brewers prospects, and the command or control has always kind of been his thing. And he's had a couple rough outings, but for the most part, he seems very comfortable. Is part of your job sort of advising the manager or the pitching coach on the right times to use a guy, or what you're experiencing mentally, like, we need to use this guy in a high leverage situation, or maybe a few low leverage situations? Like, are you in charge of picking any of that stuff out?
I'm not in charge, but I mean, we talk about Uribe at times, and it's just, the fun thing that we've seen is, like, when the moment's a little bit bigger, it seems to stimulate him. So yeah. Like, we're really comfortable with him in big spots, really. I mean, he goes into Dodger Stadium, no problem. He his first save situation in the White Sox with the extra inning rule, he controlled the runner at second. He got the job done. So it's almost like if the moment's a little bigger, it kind of like locks him in a bit more, which is really good to see with a young arm and the talent that you can see him, projecting.
A couple years now with the 3-batter minimum, and I'm wondering how that affects your job. I know handedness now isn't quite the thing it used to be, and not getting individual one-on-one matchups per se, but does that alter anything about the bullpen coach job?
Not really. You just have to spot out, point out the spots of hitters that are a little bit more aggressive to your weakness, right? So if somebody's good against your weakness, you just kind of be like, all right, hey man, we got to be not careful. I don't like to use the word careful. We got to be more aggressive. If you're gonna go to this spot of the zone, or if this guy's swing matches up to your stuff, like, let's just make sure that we are coming after this guy. We're not, there's no give in here. So those type of things, those kind of messages I'll deliver. But otherwise, I mean, you do have different arms out there for Council to kind of match up how he please. And it's, one guy, Piams, is nice that he's got a combination of a sinker and a four seam, and kind of helps neutralize things out there.
I wasn't going to ask this, but it just occurred to me, John Axford, I'm assuming you still are friends with him. I guess I shouldn't assume that, just because you're from the same country and have been teammates. But what's going on with him? Last we saw him, he was here for just a split second and then had a really bad injury. Do you know what's up with him?
Yeah, I talked to him. I talked to him once in a while. He was in the WBC, so I talked to him there. And then I know he's in town. I didn't meet up with him in person, but we texted when he was in here for the film festival. He always came back for that. Yes. So I think I see him posting a little baseball stuff just actually the last few days. So I know it's in the back of his mind still. That type of guy just never gives up. But yeah, he's been great. I mean, that's a guy who's ultimately stayed healthy for majority of his career. I know he's gone through two TJs in his career, but when you talk about his big league career, he stayed healthy through it. Got 10 years, I believe, and that's the biggest part. And he relatively threw hard throughout the most of it, and he still did near the end. So that's credit to his work ethic and his ability to go out there and do it.
All right, last question. Would you like to be a pitching coach someday? Obviously bullpen coaches and pitching coaches work hand in hand anyway. Is that something on your on your radar?
If it happens, it happens. It'd be a fun challenge. There are aspects like when you're in. When I was in AAA and the minor leagues, when you have that staff completely to yourself that you might miss, that's never the case in the big leagues. You always have help here. But it is, hey, if it happens someday, great. I am continuing to just, like, I look back at last year and this year, we're getting near the end here, and how much I've learned from Chris Hook. So it's to know that I could, every day I'll continue to learn something, is I feel like I'm in a good spot. Just continue to grow my ability as a coach and learn from him. So, if it happens, it happens. But I'm right. Still learning.
All right, sir. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.